May 12, 2021, it's Watch Pedro's show.
Thank you.
For Pedro Show, happy Wednesday. Started off with John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk doing Twinkle Tinkle. And we had Chris T doing I Can't Hold On Anymore. Got a call from Brother Matt yesterday. He reminded me 20 years is coming up in about a week for the Watt from Pedro Show.
Okay.
Miss him dearly. Yeah, Brother Matt's on the Love Grotto and the Pleasure Point here in Pedro, because still quit quarantino mode. But I'm not mad alone. You might have heard a voice, because those engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, they got Mr. Chris Sackis with me. Hey, welcome aboard, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
I had a
technical question. Did you want me to record on my end and send you a file or no?
It's the Watt from Pedro show. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. When we got off air, we'll talk about that, Chris. Okay. I want to go through your musical journey. Please bring me your earliest musical recollection.
My earliest musical recollection would have been a guy named Lou Monti, who had a song that he sang in Italian. He was one of these guys that sang in Italian and English, and my father liked his record, and it was one where the chorus went bibbidi bobbidi boop. That was about it. And what he would do is he would imitate all these instruments with his voice. So he would imitate a piccolo. He would imitate these different instruments, and then he would sing in Italian in between these imitations. He also had a song my mother liked that was sort of saucy for its time, about a fireman who would come and go. And so that was my earliest musical memory.
Where's this, Chris?
Say that again?
Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Amityville on Long Island, and most people know where Amityville is because of the Amityville Horror. And I grew up a couple of towns east, a town called Lindenhurst, and they were both on the south shore of Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Lou Reed is... We got some fucking echo problem with Skype here. But Lou Reed was somewhere. Was it called Littleton? It was like the first track home, right?
Yeah, he was, I might have been Levittown.
Levittown, that's it, that's it. Because I read the Victor Bachris book. I'm sorry. Faulty memory, Chris. Chris, in this pad.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of Jimmy Durante. What was his big song? The Inky Dinky?
It was something like that.
Yeah, because sounds were big, I think, because of immigrants, you know, and different sounds, different languages. That makes sense to me. Was there musical instruments in the pad you grew up?
There was. There was what it turned out to be a harmony, a Stratotone, I think it was the model. It was a single pickup guitar. It had the gold foil de-armand pickup in the rhythm position, and it was a very cheap guitar for back in the day, but my sister's friend Rodney left it at our house. I think it was hot, and I think he couldn't bring it home, so he left it at our house, and I became fascinated by that thing. I would pick it up and play it all the time.
Now, was there amp?
There was no amp, but this guitar, you could sort of play acoustic.
So I guess the gold foil pickup don't make much work.
Well, you know, what happened eventually is my brother, or one of my brothers, I think, stole a Wolensack reel-to-reel recorder from the high school, and that made a great little guitar amp. Matter of fact, years later, we did a show with the Big Boys, and I forget the name of their guitarist, but he used a Wolensack.
Tim Kerr.
Yeah.
He's a painter now in Austin. Really good painter.
He used the same Wolensack, the same Wolensack reel-to-reel. It was a tube amp. He used it as a preamp, and it was the most amazing thing I'd ever heard. And it hadn't occurred to me that, like, all those years earlier when I was 12 or 13, that's kind of what I was doing. I was playing through the
amp.
Now,
did you get any lessons, or were you just man alone figuring it out?
Well, after I abandoned the trombone.
Tell me about the bone, man. That's fucking bass clef. How did you get into the bone? Was it school?
Yeah, it was in elementary school. They offered marching band. It might have been junior high. And so I, you know, looked around for an instrument. I thought the tuba's too goddamn big. I don't want to play the sousaphone. I'll try the trombone. It was murder on my lips. And the next year, they offered a guitar class in the junior high. So it must have been, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, something like that.
Yeah, you don't have to march with it.
Yeah. And I, you know, at that point, my favorite person in the entire world was Jimmy Page. I was like, Jimmy Page is not playing a trombone.
No, but J.J. Johnson did this great John Coltrane now with it. I heard that there was an advantage of the bone in marching band was the big mouthpiece. because when you're marching, the thing bounces around, so the trumpet, French horn, that shit's hard. So, yeah. You know, like a lot of things human, there's pluses and minuses. Chris, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
The first record I bought with my own money was Sgt. Pepper's, and I bought it at, like, the local Woolworth on Montauk Highway, also called Merrick Road, by the locals. There was a shopping center there. I think it was the JCPenney, but they sold vinyl, and that would have been, you know, the early 70s, the first
and
record.
What was the first gig you went and saw?
First gig I ever saw was Emerson, Lake & Palmer at Nassau Coliseum.
I fell asleep at a couple of their gigs.
Yeah.
My buddy Tony loved them, so I went with him, but I always caught. The same thing happened at Rush. I want to play a Chris T song called Dan Electrotasm. That's a great title.
Thank you. Thank you.
doing everything we can. We're doing everything we can.
Have you heard about the system? It's a killer. A colorful friend, a corporate panic, a long death story of dirt and desire. Come on. Fixing your programming, it's a promise. A week's vacation and cold wet elastic, a mental aberration, make your mind go plastic. Come on. Wave above the great storm, violence and numbers. Big career, 777.
shed my ego by the weir, make myself less as we trudge through the autumn, crushing summer underfoot. Something inside me died this week, so I dare you to show me life in a season where everything is ending. You lead me to the dale where the trees shine as gold and red as apples, a forest fire against blue sky. My boots slip as I clamber on the wet rocks next to the river, scramble up and down the path, negotiate the dance of falling. I am once again learning to walk here amongst the tangled roots and thick mud, learning how to print new patterns into the earth. Across the river, the vertical rock face plunges into the water, a fearless diver. You put your hand out for us both to stop and gesture to the tiny white mushrooms on the tree by the bank. Me, too focused on the past, would not have thought to turn my head to the trunk. I step inside the earth then, sink into the thick moss, slide down the damp bark, a bathe in the silence of the natural world, only to find that it too speaks a language, one I have never bothered to learn. The water gurgles prayers to the south, the woodpecker makes earthquakes in the bark, and the branches creak as they bend towards the light, reaching, reaching, as if they could pluck the clouds from the sky. In the midst of this, a heron sits canvas still, as if it has been painted into the reeds. I wish for the impossible, beg it to teach me how to shrink. Birch and willow make me small, mushroom and gorge make me small, limestone and fossil make me small, make me splinter in palms of earth. Something inside me died this week, but I too am a season, am a bud in the belly of soil, waiting, waiting for the spring.
Look out, mama, there's a white boat coming up the river. With a big red beacon and a flag and a man on the rail. I think you better call John, cause it don't look like they're here to deliver the mail. And it's less than a mile away. I was hoping it wouldn't stay. Got numbers on the side.
Watford Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with Chris T doing Dan Electrotasm. And people, he did have a Dan Electro.
I okay. still have it.
Right. It wasn't just wishful thinking. He actually made a tune for one of the machines. Now, did it have the case with the amplifier in it?
No, it's a Dan Electro convertible. It was meant to be played acoustic or electric.
Right. It has a hole in the middle. You know, but
yeah, it's got a hole in the middle.
In the middle of the Masonite.
Right. Yeah, it's a Masonite guitar. I mean, the necks on those things are incredible. They're way better than they should be. And, yeah. You know, so
Damon had tilt adjust.
Yeah, it's
for
pretty
those
wild,
days.
Right?
And then the lipstick pickup is got a very signature sound.
Yeah, it's probably one of those guitars I will die with. You know, there are many guitars, Mike, over the years that I regret having unloaded. You know, I look back now and think I was a dope. But that is one guitar because, it cost me $200. I bought it off a friend of mine, and I probably will hang on to it.
Yeah, you know, I've seen pictures of Jimmy Page playing one of them.
Yeah,
not that model, but a Dan Electro.
Yeah, he played a DC-59 double pickup guitar, and he made the values of those things go through the roof. You know, you used to be able to pick them up.
Cashmere,
cheap,
right? Yeah. One of the later songs.
Cashmere, yeah. He famously used that guitar on Cashmere. Okay. I saw Led Zeppelin in 1977, by the way. That's the last time ever that they played at Madison Square Garden.
I think he was a junkie at that time. There's some bad stories about that tour.
He weighed about 90 pounds. Yeah,
it was a bad scene. And I guess the drummer man had nothing to live for. John Bonham, great, but he was in a bad place. I was just reading some sad things. Yeah. Robert Plant just lost his boy and shit. It was a bad time.
Can't hear you. Where'd you
Robert
go?
Robert Plant lost his boy.
Hello, Mike.
And, let me, if you can't hear me, I'm going to tell people what songs we heard. Bombs Prendon with Big Career 777. SLWCC Watt, brand new album at Iowa City. History Belongs to the Whiners. Bob Bucko Jr. with No Road Long Enough. That's by Nearby Dubuque. Sophie Sparham. Gotta have problems saying that. And Christopher Gregory doing The Dance of the Fallen. Joe Cardamone with part 13 of his Quarantina series, Day 6. Psychic Hotline after that with Regulated Lines. And Chris T, Powder Finger. Let me call him back. We lost
it. Yeah, here we go.
You wise and veteran, you.
Yeah.
The Toronto Chris suckers. In fact, 3 months ago, I was on your show, and it was beautiful. You were most kind host to me. I loved it.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get into your music thing. Like, now I'm not talking after school, like graduate, but after school in the afternoon.
Yeah.
The garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band. Did you do that?
Yeah, we had a band, me and Billy Kammerer. He played, he played rhythm and sang, and I played lead and didn't sing. It was called Cobra, and we had a pretty cool logo that was like a snake. This would have been roughly 78, and we played the hits of 1978. We played Bachman Turner Overdrive. We played Steve Miller. We played Cheap Trick. We played it all horribly, by the way.
So you guys were like copying songs off records, like me and Dee Boone. You weren't writing any of your own songs. You didn't have a drummer or a bass player either?
No, we had a drummer and a bass player, but the drummer, Ricky, was pretty steady, but the bass players would sort of revolve. We would go through them. There was a guy named Tom who was there for quite a while. Our biggest gig would have been at Our Lady of Perpetual Help, Roman Catholic Church dance, Christmas time. And that was our biggest gig ever.
Now, where was the practice pad? Was it yours?
Billy's father owned a tile business. As a matter of fact, Billy lives in Escondido now. And, he runs a tile and marble business. So he's still in the family business, but he moved out to California many years ago, and they had a warehouse in Lindenhurst where we could leave our stuff set up.
Okay.
And that's what we practiced.
But, yeah, because usually it's a drummer's pad, right? But not that kind of situation. That's bitching.
Yeah.
So you never had problems about the noise or anything.
No, we never had complaints because we were sort of in an industrial park area, so there was no one around,
that's
to complain. And sometimes we'd be in the backyard of my house in this building called the barn, the shed that my father built that had an upstairs.
Yeah.
That was like a 12 by 12 room, and all it had was electricity.
Yeah.
And we would go up there and we would make a racket. And when my mother got tired of it, she would kill the power to the barn.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that was the cue.
That was a cue that it's driving me insane. You know.
Enough!
But, you know, I realized my mother was pretty supportive with that shit. Like, my yeah. father would have never tolerated it. My father yeah. hated, you know, he did not like rock and roll. He yeah. was not a fan. He didn't, you know, he wouldn't let me watch Yellow Submarine when I visited him after my parents got divorced because he said it was about drugs. So I couldn't watch the movie. They were showing it on TV.
You know, that's not their real voices, right?
Yeah, I do know that, but it's the real
I didn't
music.
Know at the time, though. I didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
What a fraud they perpetrated on us.
They did, yeah.
But, you know, I guess that's why they call it acting, right? If you need Martians, right? So
yeah.
you got to act, yeah. So.
Were the voice actors at least Liverpudlians, or were they just like American?
I have no idea, you know?
Yeah.
If you're good... You're not supposed to know where they come from, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
anyway, about you, Chris. Now, does this band ever get? Does Cobra ever get to the point of writing Cobra songs?
No, we never did any original material. You know, we only did covers, man. We did.
Okay.
We had a set list of about 20 songs.
But I know you moved to a band where you guys started writing your own songs. So when?
Yeah, that was the next band, which was the Nihilistics, and the Nihilistics was really me and my friend Mike Nicolosi, who's now gone, on bass, and
oh,
I kind of taught him how to play the bass. He wanted to be in a band. He didn't know how to play anything. We went out and got him a Hagstrom bass, you know, because back then you can buy a Hagstrom bass for $100.
Yeah, you mean there was no crossover between Cobra and Nihilistics?
No, there was nothing really between the two. Once Cobra
not even
ended,
members, no guys. It's a whole another group.
No. It was a whole different group. A whole different set of people because the guys that were in Cobra
yeah.
were really about Fry Boots and, you know, Puka Shells. They were not... They were not about punk rock at all. They didn't like
I remember those days. It was definitely a line in the sand.
Yeah, on Long Island, oddly enough, Mike, there was a big southern rock thing. Like, you wouldn't think
Long
Island.
I believe it.
Yeah, but in
you know, Dixie was written by an Ohio guy in New York City. I mean, you know, John Fogerty, very Northwest Bayou.
Yeah, right. He's from the Bay Area, right? So, you know, but Marshall Tucker Band, you know, Leonard Skinner, anything like that. Molly Hatchet was huge. But I remember when the Sex Pistols played, you know, when they toured America and the news would routinely have stories about them, I found myself thinking, what the hell are Sex Pistols? And the more they were mocked, the more interested I was. I was like, why are they... You know, like they would always arch an eyebrow when the newscaster would say Johnny Rotten or Sid Vicious. And I would think, like, who the hell is Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious? And there was a kid in our school, Lenny Lobriano, who wore a Nevermind the Bollocks pin. You know, like it was a square pin that was like the cover of the album. And I remember seeing that and thinking, what? And they're like, this is the only kid apart from me, I think, who's heard of the Sex Pistols in our high school, and that sort of began this journey for me that led to, you know, being in the Nihilistics.
Right, and away from Cobra.
And away from Cobra, yeah.
Okay, so what was the first Nihilistic song, Chris?
It was called Grandmas Are Made for Kicking, and it was about kicking your grandmother down the stairs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. You know, and I remember Mike got into writing lyrics. Mike really, you know, like once Mike picked up the bass and started playing and realizing that we could do it ourselves, he was way into writing lyrics and he came up with some very interesting stuff.
Now, what about Drummer Man? Was it a power trio?
You know, initially, for some reason, every band I've been in, like, singers and drummers have been hard to find. So initially, we went through a whole list of them, like, people we would meet at clubs, and they would last for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they would decide they didn't want to do it. And finally, we found this kid that lived in our very own town. Like, he had been under our nose the whole time, and his name was Troy, and he was really good. He was a really good drummer. He could play really fast, and he had his own kit, and he had his own car to put the kit in. And, you know, that shit was important because I was always given bass players rides. Like, bass players, for some reason, never had a car that worked, and I would always have to pick them up in their gear.
In the big fucking amp.
The big fucking amp, yeah. But Troy had a job. He had a drum set. He had a, you know, car, and he could play. And that's all the requirements.
That's it.
You know.
Okay, tell me about the first Stylistics gig.
Our first gig was, oddly enough, at Max's Kansas City.
Yeah.
I remember having to hump our gear up like two flights of stairs to get there, and it was a benefit for Damaged Goods Fanzine, which was Lyle Heisen's fanzine, and Lyle was in the Misguided at the time. He went on to form Das Damen,
yeah.
And they were on SST Records.
I remember Das Damen.
Yeah, Das Damen, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a, well, everything's rock and roll, but maybe a little slower than hardcore.
Yeah, yeah, they were more of, you know, they fit in with, like, the bands that were on the SST label a bit more. They were not like a, Das Damen was not New York hardcore, I wouldn't call it that. It was like, they were more trippy than that. But the Misguided were. The Misguided were a hardcore band.
Oh, sure, sure. And there was a huge front there, believe me. What was the club, A7?
A7 was a big nexus of activity, but Nihilistics played all over New York. You know, we played the Mud Club. We played Danceteria. We played the Peppermint Lounge. We played CBGB's multiple times. We played at Great Gildersleeves and other clubs that are lost to memory. You know,
tell me about that first gig, though, the benefit. Was it a success?
Yeah, I think the benefit, you know, I think he made like $600 or something.
No, but band. They didn't throw you off. They didn't throw shit.
No. I think it went well for the band. I think the band at that point was pretty salty, and we had played together quite a bit, and I think we might have even recorded our EP by then. So, you know, we had some experience under our belts, and we had a take no prisoners attitude. We honestly didn't give a shit if people liked us or not. You know,
well, I think you have to have that in that scene, or you're gonna wilt.
Yeah, yeah. You know, our attitude towards the whole thing is, life is bleak. Fuck you. We're gonna play our songs. And you know, we got a lot of shit for being from Long Island because these idiots, you know, that were in Manhattan at the time thought Long Island was the Great Gatsby. They didn't know that. You know, Long Island was a very blue-collar place, especially the part that I came from. My father was a mechanic, for Christ's sake. So, well,
and I think Chuck D and Rakim are Strong Island.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow, I didn't know that.
Guys.
I always thought,
both
yeah,
those guys.
Yeah, you know, they might be from, like, the Amityville area. I thought you meant Chuck Dukowski for a minute. No, Chuck Dukowski's Californian, right?
Yeah, well, Chuck lives, yeah. He married a lady in a professor in Santa Barbara, UC Santa
okay.
Barbara. He lives out here now, but originally, you know.
Does he do music at all anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You know,
right.
I think he did some stuff, some kind of proj with guys in Rage Against the Machine and Cypress Hill, maybe. But we're at the end of the first hour.
Yeah.
May 12th, 2021. Edition Watt Pedro Show. Special guest Chris Sackis. Hold tight for hour two. May 12th, 2021. It's the second hour of Watt Pedro.
The world owes me a living. Got my brother, 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 got my br
Thank you. Why?
For Pedro, show start off the second hour. Nihilistics, You're the Blame. No doubt there.
Ben One Salter, of our big after, hits.
Ben Salter after that from Tasmania with Trouble Is All Around, but not here. Jesse Sheldon, that's Brother Lucas, Sydney with No Vacancy. And finally, another hit of the Nihilistics, After Death.
Oh, yeah. We had some real ditties for kitties, that's for sure.
Now, are these the bassman's Mike's words?
Yeah, you know, Mike went through a transformation after his father died. His father was in a bad car accident and then lingered in the hospital for a while and then died. And I still don't know if he died from his injuries from the car accident or some other reason. But Mike locked himself in his bedroom for like a week, week and a half. And when he emerged, he was like a different person. I mean, when I met him, he was a pretty happy, upbeat, lucky, happy-go-lucky kid. And then he, like, after he really liked his father. He had a really tight relationship with his father, and when his father died, it kind of, something changed in his brain, and he started writing these really dark songs, these dark lyrics.
Whoa. Now, did Nihilistics ever tour?
We did. We went as far north as Boston. I distinctly remember going up to Massachusetts one time, and then the furthest, like, west we ever got would have been the wilds of New Jersey, but we were four guys that, like, if you put us in a van, we probably would have murdered each other. I don't think it would have worked out well, and I was always envious of, like, the guys in Adrenaline OD who, you know, would get in a van and drive to California and play shows along the way. We were so working class that we just couldn't imagine, like, leaving our jobs to go play. You know, like, maybe we didn't have enough faith in ourselves or enough belief. But, you know, I always wondered what would have come of it if we had gone out on the road and played somewhere besides the tri-state area.
Well, where did you play in Boston? Because they had a big scene. That's kind of the I-95 network.
It's lost to memory. I don't even know. I mean, I'd have to ask Ron, the singer. He's got a better memory for this shit than I do.
Okay.
But I don't. I know we were in Boston one night, and it was like a subterranean thing. We had to go downstairs into the space where the bands were. But beyond that, I couldn't tell you the name of the club.
So it wasn't the Channel.
What was that?
It wasn't the Channel. You would have remembered the Channel.
Do you remember the Channel?
Yeah, well, because it was in the water, right? It was by where the tea party was and all that shit. It ended up burning down.
It might have been, man. I'll ask Ron the next time we talk.
Because
he's still running the band. The Nihilistics are still around, and it's still got him and Troy. And, you know, Mike is dead, so they got another bass player, and they got another guitar player, who everyone thinks is, like, the guitar player, I'm sure.
Yeah. The Channel would only let punk bands play on Sundays. And then Sundays you couldn't sell beer, right? So Andrew and his Southie guys would make sure you didn't have to go to New Hampshire to get the beer.
You hooked up with some
And you'd have to play
beer
in the afternoon, because the real bands, the hair metal, would play at nighttime on the Sundays. So you play with Husker Du or Gangrene or something like that.
Yeah.
I want to play this here. You said you played some gigs for Hilly, and you gave me some recordings here. Badge of Shame, live at CBGB.
Yeah.
Who likes to party, man? Who likes to skateboard and fuck girls and party? Oh, wow, man. Who likes New York? Who likes New York, man? That's great. That's really wonderful. Wow, man. Let's party, hardy.
Hey, man. Everyone having a good time? Everyone getting drunk and getting wild, man? Yeah, man, that's where it's at.
Yeah. diamond in the country. I'd passed her on. Her room was filled with a warm light glow. I was singing into the darkness. Moonlight thick as my heart. There was no way she could understand. There was a roaring in the blood.
stars behind his eyes, and hair like metal in the sun, and lips too warm for life. I always thought
John Scully, the drummer. Thank you.
It's not a made up word.
It might mean something in another land.
In another land, yes.
Here's
the guitar!
My guitar! Hey, thanks, Dutch Babies, for inviting us along tonight. They're up next.
Sunset Cabaret, coming out soon on a record.
Holy in my bones, my holy in my room. Fuck the toast, man. heart is round, we run out of ways for batting. In a day, you relate to what makes it flippant. I'm flipping tricks, not for favor, but in the mix. Victim bird in hand, superseded, depleted, got a wild card. The pitch went up our right, sometimes in our life. It's apparently we got cold, it's dark under the dark light. I really wanted to let you know it's okay. But we're all aware of things we should not say. But we're all aware of things we should not say. I really wanted to let you know it's okay. We're all aware of things we should not say. We're all aware of things we should not say.
Pedro Show. We're regretting the fact that the only video of Nihilistics was in Mike Bassman's basement that got flooded.
Yeah.
So we got no, but we do have audio, people, and you just heard right there, Badge of Shame, live at CBGB, Nihilistics.
1984, yeah, that was the beginning of the end, Mike. The beginning of the end.
Beginning of the end. Why do you say that, Chris?
Well, because it was around then that, like, Mike and Ron started really getting into, like, Judas Priest and stuff like that. And they decided what the Nihilistics needed was a lead guitarist. And Ron drafted his brother, who was a kid that played a BC Rich Warlock or one of those really pointy guitars. And had really long hair. And we did a couple of rehearsals with this kid. And I just remember looking over thinking, this is never going to work. I don't want to do this. This sounds like shit, and there's no way we're transforming ourselves into, like, Judas Priest light. I don't even know what the hell they wanted to do, frankly, but it was at that point that I just got disillusioned because, you know, we were a four-piece, and I thought a pretty good four-piece, and I didn't think we needed to, you know, add a fifth member, especially one, you know, who didn't really, you know, like, just didn't get the whole idea of the thing, and so it, for me, it was very disillusioning.
Now, you started the band.
I started the band. I named the band. I came up with the name of the band. And I taught Mike, you know, how to play bass. And it was me and Mike before it was anybody else. And I was in that weird position of, like, basically leaving the band that I started.
Yeah, you being wrestled out of your own band.
You know, it's like, it's weird when the bandmates, your bandmates sort of, like, just start going in a different direction entirely and you don't want to go with them. Then you have a choice to make. And my choice was, you know, at that time, around that time, I also had been in a car accident myself. I got some money from the settlement because I was hit by a checker cab that was doing about 70 while I was stopped at a red light. And I was, you know, I took the money. After the lawyer took his cut, I got about $6,000. And I used it to move to New Jersey. I got the hell out of Long Island. Once and for all. So that was pretty much it. Once I moved to New Jersey, I didn't really see those guys anymore. And there was years we didn't talk. We tried to get back together at one point, and it kind of went horribly because Mike was an alcoholic, among other things. He was tough to be around. He would get really abusive after a few beers. And when Mike was drinking beer, like, he would drink it warm. There would be a case of beer in the corner of his room. He would, before you knew it, down a six-pack. And he didn't even care if it was, like, cold. I mean, to me, the point of beer is it's cold. The point of beer to him was it gets me drunk, right? So that's – and he was a really abusive drunk and unpleasant to be around. So that was it for me. And periodically over the years, he would reach out to me. He would call me when things were going bad between him and Ron. And the last time I saw him, he clamped his hands around my throat and tried to choke me to death.
Why?
So – you know, I still don't know. I know it was around Halloween. Against my better judgment, I went to visit him because I was visiting my mother the next town over for, like, Thanksgiving. And I went over there, and he was watching the movie Maniac on his projection TV on a loop. So he was watching it over and over again. He was smoking one cigarette after another. He was drinking beer. And at one point, I was on this couch. It was kind of a soft, comfortable couch, and he looked at me and he said, "Would you mind if I choke you?" And I thought he was joking, like you would think somebody would be joking about that. And I was like, sure, why not? Or something. I forget what I said. And the next thing I know, he came over and he stuck his knee in my chest and he pushed me into the couch and he clamped his large hands around my throat and he started choking me. And if it wasn't for his wife, who was in the kitchen cleaning up at the time, seeing what was happening and running out and pulling him off of me while screaming, Mike, what are you doing? I think he might have killed me. I honestly was starting to black out. I was starting to not be able to breathe. And no matter what I did, I couldn't get him off of me because he was pressing his full body weight. And Mike was a tall guy. Mike was like 6'2", you know, and he was bigger than me. And he was using his body weight and his hands to, like, and then when it was all over and I was gasping for air, he sunk down into his couch and he buried his head in his hands and he said, "You ruined my life." And I still don't know what the fuck he meant by that. I have no idea. Dude, I have no idea.
Humans are a mystery, Chris.
Yeah, well, he died of blood cancer. And, you know, I went to the funeral and someone at the funeral, when I asked him, you know, what they were doing there, they said, "I just want to make sure he's dead." So, you know.
There's a Buddy Rich joke about that.
Oh, really?
Look, yeah, I should
maybe
tell
that's
people.
What it was. Maybe it was the
there is, you know, keep calling his wife, right? Is he dead?
Yeah.
Is he dead? I just want to hear it, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. I should tell the other people we play after Nihilistics, which might be apropos. Murdered Men with Corvette, Hunted by Murder by Death. Miriam Gendon with the red dress. Calumet, live at 12 at the 5 o'clock lounge, Duo Decimal System in Cleveland. Tim Holehouse with Twitch. And finally, live at CBGB, Hangout from the Nihilistics. Now, Hangout don't sound so bad.
You know, it's one of the few songs I wrote in the band. I wrote
Hangout. It's a Chris T song. Okay.
It's a Chris T song, and I sang it, too. That was me singing.
Okay, great.
I never sang. You know.
Well, look. You did hear.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that, man.
Yeah, that's
did you have to borrow? Did you have to borrow somebody's mic, or did you have your own?
That was at CBGB's, right? That was one of the CBGB's live songs.
Oh, man, I learned to bring my own mic along. You go on after Gigi Allen, you bring your own mic. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, May 12th, 2021, Dish Bot Peter Show, special guest Chris Takis. Hold tight for hour three. May 12th, 2021, third hour, What for Pedro Show.
I say,
Oh my God, Jay. What I would do for you.
Thank you.
Can't you be mine?
third hour, start off with Sweet Jane, little pun rock here, people, because like sweet, like a symphony, you know, something. And of course, Lou's song from Strong Island, Kinder Gentle, and then Pino Ventana, which is Jason Lafarge from what's that studio in Brooklyn, Caesar's Palace, Caesar's, yeah. And Rats for Belmer, Modern Blonde, Modern Life, and finally Jungle Creeps, somewhere in between. So these are some other kind of music projects of yours, Chris. Enlighten me about Kinder Gentleman.
Kinder Gentleman was RCA Records put out a Cowboy Junkies cover of Sweet Jane, and Lou Reed said it was the best version he had heard, and RCA Records, as a promotional thing, said, let's hear the worst version of Sweet Jane. Submit your version of Sweet Jane. So me and my friend Tom Bergen went and recorded that one, and I added all the sound effects, and and we came in second. We won a CD player with that song. It was not quite as bad as the first worst.
Yeah, what was the first worst like?
I don't even remember. Oh, okay. I'm not sure I ever heard it. I just remember thinking we took second place.
So this is such a prod that it was only for one tune.
It was only the one song. Okay. Yeah, the Kinder Gentleman was like we recorded one song and then we broke up.
Sometimes, you know, that's good enough.
It was good enough.
Now, enlighten me about Jungle Creeps.
Jungle Creeps was a band that I joined on guitar. This woman, Paula Carino, it was her band. She wrote the songs and, you know, the lyrics, and she sang. And I joined the band, and then I violated that fundamental rule about not becoming involved with you're in a band with.
Yeah.
I ended up in a relationship with the singer, and she did that famous thing where, you know, I was in Chicago. I came back to find out that she had slept with an old boyfriend, and I broke up with her, and then she begged me to take her back, and then 2 months later, she dumped me. So it was a little bit of drama. Yeah, it was that famous thing where I probably should have just stayed broken up. It would have been better for me because I went through some changes over that, Mike.
Yeah, okay. So it was a jungle creep.
It was.
Or slog. More of a slog.
But we're friends on Facebook now. Like, she's married, I'm married. She's a really good person. She's a yoga teacher and lives in Brooklyn. But, you know, she's still doing music, and I always thought she was incredibly talented. It's just that, you know, I got involved with her. I made the mistake of getting involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, here's another project, Missing Foundation.
Missing Foundation was an industrial band based in New York, started by Pete Missing, and the shows were legendary for people getting hurt because they were very violent. I would try to stand at the back of the stage because, among other things, they would take over storefronts that had been abandoned. This is early 90s New York City or late 80s, something like that. And they would hang these big sheets of metal from the ceiling and then, you know, pound on it throughout. And then the sheet of metal would eventually fall, you know, or somebody would kill the power in the space. There's video footage out there. If you go on YouTube and look for Missing Foundation, it's pretty amazing.
Well, unfortunately, our visuals are missing, but we do have audio. Yeah. Let's listen.
Thank you. Give them all my love. Give them all my love. Give them all. Thank you.
Walk for Pedro, show last music for this edition. Burn trees. Or burn storefronts. Pound the shit out.
Pete Missing had a theory that trees represented the first, like, wave of gentrification. When they started putting trees in, you knew that the yuppies were coming. So, hence, burn trees.
Okay.
I'm not saying.
No, I know. You get no debate from what. I'm just a witness. I'm just a witness. Then we had something live from Wystalka. I think these guys are from Croatia. Pasje alcohol. Yeah, maybe pass the booze, huh? What do they call beers over there? Pivo.
Pivo?
Yeah,
now,
Pivo's the
I'll never go thirsty. Czechoslovakia.
Well, Croatia. But they're close. And I think they use Pivo for all their words. Russia, Poland, all those Slav people say Pivo. And then the brandy's called Slivovitz, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to know how to get Baracho. Man, I had some raw shit. Anyway, Trupa Trupa after that from Poland with Gim Mal. The Tibetan Tantric Choir with the part 3 of 3 from side 2 of their the Giotto Monks cassette. And then finally, this project of yours that you brought called Wrench and a tune called Vint.
Yeah, named after the bass player. There you go.
Oh,
yeah,
you mean they're sharing members of Missing Foundation?
Yeah, after both of us left Missing Foundation, we started Wrench with this guy, Jim Moffitt, who's now gone on drums. Jim, after Wrench, ended up in Missing Foundation. So we were two bands that were swapping members back and forth. And yeah, it was a trio. Jim on drums and me on guitar and Vince. And we tried to get vocalists, but it never worked out. We tried women vocalists, male vocalists. You know, we tried singing ourselves. And that's an instrumental because, I mean, ultimately, we probably should have just been an instrumental band.
Why not? And what are you doing for music these days, Chris?
I am not doing anything these days except playing down in the basement by myself every once in a while.
Do you record?
I haven't recorded in a really long time. You know, mostly I do my show. I do Aerial View on thehoundnyc.com on Friday nights and interview people like Mike Watt. You know, so my last show I had Deke Dickerson on from Untamed Youth, who, you know, lives just north of Hollywood and is a really fantastic guitar player. So I've been interviewing cats that I came up with from the NYHC scene and the punk scene and trying to drill down into that a little bit because, you know, I think what's happening now is people are unearthing all of that history. They want to know about what happened in the early 80s. And I'm sure you know this as much as anybody.
Yeah, especially younger people.
Yeah.
Even though there's a lot of internet information, it's still good to hear the voices of the cats themselves, I think, Chris. So you do a fucking righteous service by letting people speak with their own voice about times that they actually lived.
And you and I have something in common in that we had the advantage of actually being there and living through it. So I think it gives a different take on things.
Yeah.
And you're still doing it. To your credit, you're still at it. I mean, that's, you know, remarkable because the number of people who have stayed in the game that long is, it's you know, there's not that many. So kudos to you.
Yeah, but I mean, think about John Coltrane days and those guys.
Right.
There's nobody left from those. Marshall Allen, yeah. You know, and he's still touring in Vans. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess when it comes to that thing, you got to take it as a personal kind of trip, I think. Because if you're looking for peer approval, maybe that's the wrong tree to bark.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I was ever looking for that. I just
wanted to be. No, I don't think you were. But, you know, no, I think, because in the old days, definitely this was not a popular movement. So you had to be into it.
Yeah. For us, it was the equivalent of, you know, like it was the thing that got us out. Where other people might have used some kind of, like my Uncle Bobby, it was wrestling for him. Other guys I know, it was baseball or basketball or something. For me, it was playing guitar, being in a band. That took me out of Long Island. It got me out of, you know, the provincial sort of place that I came from. And it took me into Manhattan in the late 70s, early 80s, which was, you know, not that great for people who don't know. You know, and when I think about a lot of the places that I went and stuff I did by myself, other people might have said, what about the danger? And it didn't even occur to me. We didn't even think about that back then. You know, but we were around while Son of Sam was doing his thing, for God's sake. So, you know, it's been a long journey. And, you know, I'm glad that I'm still connected to that world somehow. But it's like I don't foresee me being on stage playing guitar again. I mean, it would be nice if it happened under some circumstance, but I don't foresee it happening.
Well, in the meantime, though, maybe you can record. And
yeah.
If you do, please flow me the music because I'd love to play it on the Watt from Pedro show.
I would do that under one circumstance, and that is if you added some bass to it. That would
yes, deal. Yes. I'll be like your old bass man, Mike.
Yeah.
But I won't choke your shit out.
Will you drink a warm six-pack of blue beer?
I'll drink some frozen cold Jim Beam, and I'll keep my hands off your throat because bass players look good making the guitar man look. I love those polish.
Mike was an idiosyncratic bass player. Like most people who heard Mike play just was like, they were like, why, huh? They couldn't really make sense of it because he was not playing the root note of the chord or whatever it might support the guitar player. He was, more often than not, I was following Mike. Like Mike would come up with a riff and I would have to figure out where the chords were for that riff. You know, and back then I didn't play any cowboy chords. It was all bar chords. So, I played.
You can try and share that experience with me. I'll bring some bass to your songs, Chris. No problem.
All right.
Just bring it.
Thank you.
Beautiful you being on the show. Thank you so much.
People,
it's been the May 12, 2021 Dish Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.